Chicago, we're talking about energy and energy production today, focusing on research being conducted on, of all things, leaf cutter ants. Hi, Jill Nadeau here. I'm filling in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network. In the studio with me are John Greenler, the Director of Education and Outreach at the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center and the Wisconsin Energy Institute. Good to have you back with us, John.
Always a pleasure to be here. Thanks, Jill.
And he brought in Camilla Carlos with him. She is a postdoc in the Curry Lab at UW-Madison. Camilla has a PhD in genetics and molecular biology from the University of Campinas, and I did it right the first time, but not the second, Brazil, and joined the Curry Lab in 2015. Thanks for coming in, Camilla.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
You bet. We're going to talk to them about bioenergy and some of the exciting research that's being conducted. If you've got questions, I hope you'll give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. And of course, you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org, and you can post on our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. And when I on air produce, I get a lot of people calling in to ask how to spell Mueller. So I'm going to tell you it's M-E-I-L-L-E-R. So that'll make it easier for you to find us on Facebook. So let's talk about energy. John, okay, I have to tell you, I am still a little fuzzy on this whole bioenergy thing. So what's the definition?
So, well, first off, there's bioenergy and there's biofuels.
And they're not the same thing?
Well, really, I would say that biofuels is a subset of bioenergy. So bioenergy is really a broad category that includes...
So it's like an umbrella.
Right. I mean, it's simple as, you know, burning logs in your fireplace for heat, you know, in the winter is a form of bioenergy.
Okay.
And in some parts of the world, that can be very, very significant.
Okay. So you're basically using
heating and cooking
plant.
Is it? Right.
Okay.
But, you know, here in the United States, we actually do have, you know, commercial scale electrical plants, for example, which are burning, you know, wood residue and things like that. And that's a form of bioenergy to generate electricity. But also in that category is what we would call biofuels. And really there, we're looking at the opportunity to make liquid fuels for transportation, cars, trucks, planes, etc., out of biological biomass materials, largely plant-based materials.
So then biomass is what in that?
Yeah, so biomass is some of those broad categories. It really it can be a number of different things, but it's really, as I said, largely, you know, we're looking at plant-based materials. You know, traditionally here in the United States, when we talk about biofuels, you know, we do have this very large industry using corn grain to make ethanol that goes into pretty much all of our gasoline, E10 as we know it. And actually at this point in time, you know, it's somewhere between maybe 30% and 40% of our corn grain harvest is actually going into making that ethanol for fuel.
Really?
So it's a very large industry. It's a very significant component of what's going on in terms of our corn production. Our focus in the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center is actually really kind of going beyond that, using what we would call fibrous or cellulosic biomass. Essentially, it's all that non-food material that plants grow. It's largely actually in the cell wall. So, and interestingly enough, if you actually look at the biochemistry associated with that fibrous material, much of what's in there, you know, probably about two-thirds or more of it is actually polymers of sugar. And so by breaking down those polymers into those sugars, we can then use a fermentation process to make biofuels. So, and that could be ethanol, but, you know, I think of increasing interest for us is actually the ability to make more advanced fuels that would be direct replacements for diesel or jet fuel and similar.
Okay, well, great. Thank you for clearing all that up for me. It gets confusing.
So, understandably.
Yeah. So, Camilla, what brought you into bioenergy?
Well, I'm from Brazil, and Brazil has a huge tradition on biofuels.
Oh.
We have been using ethanol since, I think, the 70s. So, and we produce ethanol from sugarcane, which is a little bit more efficient than the corn.
Mm-hmm.
So my university in Brazil has a really huge tradition on research on biofuels. And I think what brought me to is mainly like the sustainability aspect and Yeah, and the benefits to climate change.
Sure. And the Curry Lab in particular. How did you get from Brazil to Wisconsin? Don't say a plane.
So I first came to U.S. to Illinois, to the University of Illinois, and I was working there. But it's Illinois, it's not Wisconsin, right?
Oh, we love you, Camilla. No offense to our Illinois listening friends.
Yeah. It's just a joke.
Yeah.
And then, I started looking for other options, and I saw the Curry Lab, and I thought it was really interesting, all the work that with the leaf cutter ends. And for me, it was something that I never, a system that I never have thought about, like how much benefit it could bring to the biofuels.
And John, how did the Curry Lab get started? Why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
Well, the Curry Lab, I mean, you know, Cameron's work predates the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center, and it is an interesting story. So 10 years ago, as I understand it, you know, when the research center was being formed, we were really, you know, trying to look very fundamentally at what kind of science could we bring that would allow us to you know, come with breakthrough understandings to allow us to really make these sustainable liquid fuels. And one of the real challenges is being able to break down, deconstruct that complex biomass, into these sugars to then be able to make the fuels. And I think looking to nature, for what, what's already going on out there is always a great way to do that. And we knew that there were these, colonies of ants out there, leafcutter ants, that Cameron was already studying, that, are really good at essentially using that biomass to, it's a great story, and I'll let Camilla tell most of it, but really what the ants do is they actually farm various microbes, fungi, which facilitate the breakdown of that biomass into sugars that can then be used, for them, it's their food. And we're like, what if we could, they've been farming far longer than we have. Can we figure out, their micro farming techniques, so to speak, essentially adapt their technology, the enzymes they use, et cetera, to be able to make sustainable biofuels.
Okay.
How did I do, Camilla?
Did well.
Go right ahead. How do they do that?
So the leafcutter ants, these ants are only found in South America, Central and South America, and you guys probably have seen some pictures of them.
And we have one on our Facebook page.
Exactly. So. They always are carrying those big leaves that are much bigger than them, and is always used as an example of how strong they are. They cut those leaves, and they actually don't eat the leaves. What they do, they bring the leaves to their nest, and they feed a fungus with the leaves, and the fungus will eat the sugar in the leaves, and the ants will eat the fungus.
Oh.
So, and then after the fungus eat most of the mostly the easier material. Most of the fibers and lignin still are in the leaves, and the ants, they clean up their nest because they're really clean. And so they clean and they make these dump areas where they leave all those undigested material for the that the fungus didn't eat. So, and also in this dump region, in this dump material, then the rest of the decomposition of the material happens. And so we try to understand both how the fungus initiates the process, and then after that, how the community of microbes that lives in this dump finish the digestion of the plant.
Okay. Well, and then we're going to find out soon about how that relates mm-hmm. to biofuel. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau, and I'm sitting in for Larry. Today, our guests are John Greenler, and the Director of Education and Outreach at the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center and the Wisconsin Energy Institute, and Camilla Carlos, a researcher at the Curry Lab here at UW-Madison. Why don't you join the conversation? All of our lines are open. We want to hear from you. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Okay, so let's go back to how that cutter ant thing mm-hmm. relates to energy.
Yeah.
So how? Tell me, just how.
The first aspect that we try to understand is how the fungus starts the degradation of the plant biomass. So what are the enzymes that the fungus produce that allows it to eat the plant. So we have to remember that we are talking about microbes that are really small, and usually the plant cell wall is much bigger. So, and the cell and the fibers that make the plant cell wall are really big for the microbe perspective. So they cannot just englobe, like put this inside of them. They actually have to break in small pieces, and then they can transport to inside of their cells. So they use enzymes for that. So they secrete enzymes that go and eat the fiber, like it starts breaking down the fibers, and then you're gonna have the sugars, the simple sugars that actually can be transported to inside of the cells.
Okay.
So we look at the fungus and what are the enzymes that it produces, and also in the dump, the same thing. We try to understand what are the enzymes that the microbes in the dump are using to degrade the plant cell wall.
Okay, so those enzymes are the key thing you're looking at. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. The enzymes are really mission critical because they have the catalytic activity to break down these polymers into the sugars, glucose, and similar. So, and then clearly, you know, each enzyme, getting into some basic molecular biology and genetics, each enzyme has its corresponding gene. And so, you know, if we can actually find the enzyme and then the corresponding gene, then we're in a position of being able to actually, you know, be able to produce those enzymes or utilize the microbes with those enzymes, enhance that activity such that, you know, we can harvest that fibrous biomass ourselves.
Right.
Yeah, and break it down into sugars and then make fuel.
Interesting. Wow. How close are you?
Well, we have had a lot of we have found different enzymes already in our lab. For example, we study a lot of streptomyces too, which is a bacteria that is also really good on degrading biomass, and we have found some really good enzymes on that. So we sequence their genomes, and also we try to understand what are the enzymes that are being produced in different conditions. So if we feed microbes with switchgrass and compare with feeding with glucose, pure glucose, we can see what are the enzymes that are necessary to degrade that material. There's one grad student in my lab that studied the fungus from the leafcutter ants, and she fed the fungus, the ants, with oats or flowers and leaves, and then we saw the huge plasticity that the fungus has and the different enzymes that it produced for each material.
Wow, interesting. That's so interesting. Did you have something to add to that?
I just was going
to
add it. You know, it's been interesting, you know, over the past 10 years now to watch the advancement of the cellulosic biofuels industry, and we now actually have 10 commercial scale, you know, plants. They're using kind of early generation technology, and we know that they can be much more efficient. And so, you know, we're really kind of looking, you know, ways to get, you know, new enzyme systems to really, you know, advance this, and to be able to use, you know, a broader diversity of different types of materials as well. So.
Okay, well, great. Let's go to the phones, and we have a caller from Toma. Hi, Daniel.
Hello.
What's your question?
Hi. We're in a cold area, and the way I understand, biofuel is not effective in the cold weather. Some people use it in an I-drive semi,
mm-hmm.
and I know a lot more trucks are frozen in the wintertime, and they have to cover up or make special coating over the biofuel because it freezes faster than regular fuel.
Is that true, John?
So yeah, there's a lot of different details depending upon what type of fuel you're looking at. So yeah, clearly you're talking about biodiesel, and the early generation biodiesel that we're working with today, you know, is made from soybean or canola oil, or even, you know, waste oil that's, you know, coming from fast food industry or similar. And you're right; those biofuels, those biodiesel products, do have different properties dependent upon temperature. But, you know, what we're really looking at, which we're really excited about, is actually the ability to make compounds, you know, hydrocarbons, essentially, that would be direct substitutes for different types of fuels, including diesel. So really, in terms of the chemistry, you know, future generation biodiesel, biofuel products more broadly will be these what we call drop-in fuels. So there wouldn't need to be any alteration in terms of how the fuel is handled, the functionality of the engine. So that's really the future, you know, that we are really closing in on. So.
Okay, great. Thank you for the question, Daniel. If you have a question, give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, and you can always send us an email. The address is ideas@wpr.org. Well, coming up at 11:45, it's time for our monthly check-in with the weather guys. We're going to be talking about rain levels and a new satellite equipment that tests lightning, and of course, the solar eclipse. Does it have effect on weather? Well, we'll find out. Hope you can stay with us. Right now, we are talking about bioenergy with John Greenler from the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center and the Wisconsin Energy Institute, and Camilla Carlos, a researcher at the Curry Lab here at UW-Madison. Camilla, tell us about the ant cam.
Yeah. That's a really it's a really neat thing that we have in our lab. So we have several ant colonies in our lab, but we have one that is for display. So anyone can go to the Department of Bacteriology and check it out. Some, we feed them, I think, twice or three times a week, and you can see them cutting the leaves and bring them back. And you can, and with the ant cam, you can actually watch them taking care of the fungus garden from your home. And it is really interesting. People usually get impressed with their size, the difference of size. We have workers, ants from different, a huge difference, the difference in size. I think it's a really neat outreach tool that we have also for kids and anyone that is curious about it.
It's really popular with classrooms. I know that for sure.
Yeah.
So you can visit them live. If you're on the UW-Madison campus and you go to the Microbial Sciences Building, or everyone calls it MSB, there's a little mini museum, microbial museum there, and the ants are definitely they steal the show. So, so definitely worth a visit.
Now, where on campus is that approximately?
It's just a couple buildings away from Babcock Hall and the ice cream store. So many people know that landmark.
Yeah, people know the ice cream.
So it's just right around the corner. So
that's great.
Really centrally located. Yep.
Well, excellent. And let's go back to the phones. We've got Dave in Toma. Hi, Dave.
Yeah, good morning. I wanted to find out about the efficiency of these new ideas, because past studies have shown that corn, you know, it's really questionable whether there's any net benefit of energy from it. Plus, all the pollution that's created by, you know, tearing up all the acres where the bees and the butterflies reproduce. Plus, we're doing twice the pollution by burning ethanol, because we have to use energy to make it, and then we burn the ethanol itself. And that about covers all my questions.
Okay. Well, John, I'm sure you get that question a lot.
Yeah, and it's a really important question as well. And the good news is, you know, things are really changing quite rapidly. So you're right, when we look at the kind of traditional, biofuel industry here in the United States, we're going from corn grain to ethanol. There is an energy gain, a net energy yield today, but, you know, it's maybe we're looking at kind of getting twice as much energy out as we put in, which isn't trivial, but we're really looking to do a lot better. And, you know, as you're intimating, you know, there are a lot of things that go, you know, there's a lot of energy that goes into growing corn for grain, and then some of them are kind of hidden. We think about the tractor, driving the tractor, all that kind of stuff, but nitrogen fertilizer requires a tremendous amount of energy to produce. Irrigation is also really significant, and the list goes on. And it's an annual, so you have to keep working the soil. So what we're really interested in is kind of what we would call next generation biofuels, where we're getting away from those annual crops and looking more at perennials, where you plant them once and you're getting, you know, maybe, you know, 10, 20, maybe more years of harvest by just one planting, one plowing session, et cetera. But maybe even more importantly is these perennial crops, such as switchgrass, are much more efficient in terms of fertilizers that are needed. We actually just had a PhD student who just finished her thesis, and her research showed that, you know, there's a good chance that actually adding nitrogen to a field of switchgrass actually does more harm than good. And because they have these very deep roots, they're very efficient. efficient in terms of water use. So in a drought year, switchgrass will just, keep on pumping, and going along as if, there was no problem, because their roots go about 10 times deeper than the plants go up. It's almost like an inverted forest, if you think about kind of like an iceberg. Most of that plant's actually below ground. So, we're looking at an opportunity of essentially, increasing that efficiency an order of magnitude or more, maybe getting, 10 times plus the amount of energy out that goes in. So, and I'll just, you also just, in your question, you just briefly commented or were wondering about biodiversity. And the other great news about these perennial crops is we had the opportunity to actually put multiple species into these plantings, multiple plant species. We found that our research has shown that even just having five or six different plant species in these perennial plantings, you get about 95% of the biodiversity of insects, birds, et cetera, that you would have from a full-on prairie restoration, for example. So we're very cognizant and really working hard to enhance our landscape in multiple dimensions, not only just in terms of energy, but also in terms of those ecosystem services like biodiversity.
Well, that sounds like you're definitely headed in the right track there, John. And hopefully, Dave, that answered your questions. And thanks for bringing it up. Let's also take a call from Jean in Merrill. Hi, Jean.
Hi, good morning. I am calling about cyanobacteria as potentially or perhaps already implemented biofuel. I live on a sub-Laurentian lake of 150 acres. It's eutrophic in northern central Wisconsin, and we're trying to combat or at least mitigate the blooms that happen. But some of the talk that has come up in our task force of trying to deal with this has been potential usages for biofuels. And my questions specifically are there plants for that, industries for that across America? Are there any in Wisconsin?
I don't think Wisconsin is an ideal region for the growth of algae. Usually, the biofuels from algae, they are designed to be in regions that have a lot of sunlight. So usually, they build like those pools in desert areas. And I might be wrong, but I heard that there are some in the west of U.S. and other places in the world that have, for example, is Spain is going really fast with the biofuel from algae.
Okay. Go ahead, John.
You can, and Camilla's exactly right in terms of kind of this, another kind of almost a third generation of biofuels have actually come with specific algae that are very efficient in making fuel. But we there is the opportunity to take, from a lake that's eutrophied, if you can harvest that, that algae material once again, it's a lot of cell wall material, fibrous material that actually can be treated as a residue material and turned into a fuel as well. So
when you're saying we don't have enough in Wisconsin of algae, is there any research going on where you take stuff like we've got a little bit of this and we've got a little bit of that and we put it all together, or is that just not going to work?
I think we're my understanding, I think we still need more research on the isolated systems, and we still are not like as far to start combining technologies like that. When I say that Wisconsin doesn't have enough, it's not doesn't have enough algae, but I think it's because it's definitely because of the sunlight. So you cannot just harvest algae the whole year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not in the winter.
Yeah.
not good algae. Yeah. All right, little Jean, thank you so much for that question. That was great. And if you've got a call, or if you've got a question, rather, give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. And we do have open lines, and we would love to hear from you. But let's go to Mike he's near Fond du Lac. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I would like the guest to expand upon some of the foundational ideas behind what they're trying to do, because I think based on the number of the callers, I think people are confusing old technology around the manufacture of biodiesel and ethanol using, basically ancient technology such as saponification and fermentation, to really expand upon how the technology that they're talking about, second and third generation, is closer to some of the physical chemistry type methods that were done by the Germans in the 40s with coal, which is breaking down, you know, a natural material using physical chemical properties into its constituent components and then rebuilding those components into a very customized, very specific fuel that could be, as they already stated, can be direct replacements. And that this is fundamentally different technology than, you know, what people have been, you know, saying is the negative side. And then one last thought is the other thing too is that using these biological methods, we have the operation or the opportunity to do cogeneration and utilize waste heat from coal-fired plants or other industrial processes like Amazon data centers and whatever to allow for some of these biological processes to be done in colder climates by utilizing waste industrial heat and other similar technologies. So there's lots of opportunities here, and I'd like to get a more foundational statement from the guests, please.
Well, do you have much to add to that? Because I think Mike did a pretty darn good job, John.
Yeah, Mike, you're definitely you're wonderfully, you know, kind of deep into some of the complexities of energy systems. So yeah, I really appreciate you know, some of the things you're talking about, and it is really interesting. You know, there are really two fundamentally different ways of producing fuels from biomass, as you were indicating. You know, one is through fermentation, such as where we get ethanol today. And on that front, it is really interesting that when we look at the biochemical metabolic pathways that are available to us in kind of the diversity of biology that's out there, we can make ethanol, but we can make probably about 20 different types of biofuels just using kind of these different metabolic pathways. Interestingly, one that I think is very significant is the opportunity to actually be able to make fatty acids through metabolic pathways. And then once we get to fatty acids, we can make a number of different types of fuel, such as drop-in biodiesel or jet fuel even as well. But then you're right, there's a whole other parallel technology which is being developed, which is more based on catalytic methods, not so much focused on fermentation. And, earlier I mentioned that we do have these 10 different commercial scale plants that out there. It's interesting, some of them are actually using biological processes, using fermentation. So if we look to Iowa, for example, where they're taking corn residue material or what's known as corn stover to produce ethanol. They actually are using biological methods, but then there's commercial scale plants, for example, in the southeast part of our country using yellow pine residue material from forestry down there. And there, in that case, they actually are using catalytic mechanisms. So, it's really important to kind of be able to match the right technology to the right need and the right type of material that's available. I will just actually also appreciate, you know, you briefly mentioned cogeneration and the ability to efficiently take what's frequently waste heat and be able to use it for different industrial or even, heating in cities or whatnot. This is something that is very common in Europe and is really being looked at here in the, you know, for broad adoption here in the United States. Things like what are known as microgrids, which you've talked about in some past shows, where we really make a much more efficient energy system. And that really is mission critical overall as we look at kind of bringing on clean energy systems. Being more efficient is going to have to happen if we're really going to kind of move away from fossil fuels.
Okay. Well, Mike, thank you so much for that call. That was lovely. I think John probably liked that. And, you know, we did have a post on Facebook from Bruce, and Bruce was wondering if there are any facilities that burn invasive plant species as biomass fuels in Wisconsin. I'm sure he's got some invasive species he'd like to get rid of. So are there?
So there's definitely a lot of biomass that comes out of invasive species, and I think one of the things that's so critical is that we don't get in a situation where we start to plant some of these invasive species.
Right.
And a really good example is reed canary grass, which is very, very productive, especially in more kind of wet type situations. But we're really seeing a proliferation of it. So it would be a good potential biomass source that, you know, that's out there, but we really we just don't want to mess with it because we don't want to move it around any you know more than it already is. So in general, we really try and stay away from the invasive species. You know, if there's, you know, if they're being, you know, removed for eradication purposes, there's the opportunity, but we do need to be careful about things like spreading the seed or whatever. So
yes, that's something we definitely don't want to do. We're talking to excuse me, John Greenler, the Director of Education and Outreach at the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center and the Wisconsin Energy Institute, and Camilla Carlos, a researcher at the Curry Lab here at UW-Madison. Our phone lines are open, so please give us a call if you've got a question about bioenergy or leafcutter ants or research of that sort. The number is 800-642-1234, and you can always send us an email. And the address for that is ideas@wpr.org. So what are you two, you're in the thick of this research, what are you seeing down the road? And let's say 15 years, what is our energy going to look like?
I expect that we're definitely going to be using much more bio-based or biofuels, bioenergy. I think there is a need for that. And a lot of countries around the world are putting a lot of effort to develop new technologies. We still need some, like, more development to improve efficiency, some optimization, but I think we are definitely in the right path, and I expect and hope that we are going to be using much more. And I truly believe that the second, third generation biofuels are the way to go.
I'm sure you agree with that, John.
Absolutely, yeah. And the other thing I can add into that is, you know, it's the good news that some have probably heard that just recently the Department of Energy approved our recent proposal for another 5 years of funding for the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center. So we're really thrilled about that. And actually, it's been interesting to watch the evolution of our, you know, our mission and what our goals are in the research center. You know, and really what we're looking to in the next 5 years is a lot more research in a couple different areas. One is marginal land. So really looking at what can we do on those acres that farmers have where they, you know, they couldn't or shouldn't be growing you know, a grain crop such as corn or soybeans, but they still want productivity, but at the same time we really want sustainability and being able to plant switchgrass and biodiverse perennial plantings. I think is, you know, as we're seeing that more and more, you know, nationally, internationally, as being a critical opportunity. So there'll be a lot more research in that area. Another one, as I mentioned earlier, is really looking more at not ethanol, really going beyond ethanol and looking at developing these fuel systems, which really would be direct replacements, especially for things like diesel and jet fuel. So I think, you know, there's so much in the news currently about how we're electrifying our car, you know, our automotive industry, which is really exciting. We probably won't be seeing that so much in the near future with, you know, heavy freight trucking and flying. We just don't have the battery technology. If you wanted to fly a commercial plane with batteries, you'd probably have room for a couple passengers or something. And so being able to really look at what are those critical fuel needs that we have is really central to our, you know, the research we look forward to. And then the other one that I think is really interesting is bioproducts more broadly. As we're making these fuels, we make other compounds as well that could be a replacement for all these other things that we don't think about as much that come from our petroleum industry. Bioplastics is another great opportunity, or even pharmaceuticals as well. So,
well, that's going to kind of lead into this question I think we have from Bobby in Stevens Point. Hi, Bobby.
Hello.
What is your question for John?
I was just wondering if you had any plans for application of all of this great research into real uses, you know, business opportunities for Wisconsin, safe and
yeah,
socially responsible business opportunities.
Yeah, great question. Thank you so much. You know, and it's interesting to look at the kind of the timeline that is involved in terms of going from the basic research, which is so much of what our center is about, to, you know, to application. You know, we're really beginning to see a lot of ripple through on that. So, for example, you know, just some of the you know, statistics, we now have over 1,000 research papers published out of GLBRC, over 150 patent applications, and those kinds of applications lead to new technologies, which leads to new jobs. And then correspondingly, I think we have 5 and maybe even more startup companies based on the research of GLBRC. So we're really getting to the point now where we have the momentum, where we're seeing a lot of direct application to industry and even seeing new businesses that are coming out of that.
Okay. Does that answer your question, Bobby?
It does. Thank you very much.
You bet. Thanks for calling. We appreciate that. You know, as we kind of wind down here, we've got a couple of calls who are really interested in should some of these crops be returned to the soil.
Mm-hmm.
This I've got the concern. Is that something that you're concerned about also?
Yeah, it's a very real concern. And so when we're looking at things like, you know, the corn residue material after the grain is harvested, it's very clear that it varies depending upon the soil and climatological conditions. But maybe probably somewhere around half of that stover, that corn residue material, needs to get returned to the soil. So that is important. With these perennial crops, once again, the thing that's interesting is, you know, as we're growing these plants and we're harvesting the above ground portion of that plant, there's a tremendous amount of root development which is occurring below ground, and those roots are building organic matter in the soil. Also critically, and this is getting back to one of the things where Camilla started in terms of addressing climate change, all of that organic biomass that's coming from those plants in the soil is actually originally it was carbon in the atmosphere. So we're really sequestering carbon. We're taking it out of the atmosphere, and we're wonderfully putting it in the soil where it builds good tilth. It's good soil. It also means less greenhouse gases and hopefully less global warming and climate change in our environment.
Well, wonderful. I think you addressed those concerns very well. Thank you. I want to thank you for being with us again, John. As always, we learned so much. And Camilla, this was so interesting to talk about these leafcutter ants. And I think anybody who's interested should go to the Ant Cam on the website. And I think you can probably just Google that. And if Michelle has a chance, she'll probably put that up on our Facebook page and we can do a connect to that. So that'll be fun. And John, you have one more item.
Just a brief plug for the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center website, glbrc.org. So
wonderful.
Has a lot of broader information about all this work that's going on.
That's right. So if anything here confused you, which I'm sure it didn't, but you can always go there for more. Thank you so much. And John's going to be back on September 25th. He's going to have some more information for us. So we'll always look forward to that. And coming up next, we're talking about weather. Hope you can stay with us on the Ideas Network.